Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Any further reductions are going to have to clear a very high bar.
That is Portland's feckless mayor and police commissioner, Ted Wheeler. And he was speaking about a year ago about all the massive cuts he had made in the city's police department, the same kind of cuts that have been made in Seattle and other major cities where we've cut back police. I say we, actually some nitwits in government decided to cut back police over the objections of law-abiding citizens who understood exactly what was going to happen. And they don't seem to care. A year later, when we've seen a dramatic rise in violent crime, they're doing everything they can to say, well, that isn't about the fact that we cut back police. Who could possibly see a connection between a cut back police in police and a dramatic rise in violent crime and record high murder levels in both Seattle and Portland? And now we've got further troubles because many of those public agencies are about to fire hundreds and hundreds of cops because of an artificial vaccine mandate, which so far the federal courts don't seem to think much of. In any case, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network as well, serving the Pacific Northwest states for about 21 years now with honestly provocative talk radio. And of course, you're always welcome to become part of the conversation. If you want to jump into that conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. If you're a naysayer, you'll go right to the head of the line. Unlike every other place, we like to hear the alternate point of view. Unlike, say, school boards, many of them in America have decided they don't want to hear the other side. I'll get to that one in just a moment. But I want to remind you of where this guy was a year ago. And he's not dramatically different than Jenny Durkin up in Seattle, who actually ordered the police to allow the takeover of the CHOP zone, part of Capitol Hill, a major neighborhood taken over for about 6 weeks, a police precinct abandoned and surrendered to the mob. Yeah, well, listen to what 1 year ago feckless Ted was trying to do to defend the massive cuts he'd made in the police budget at the demand of the mob in the streets, not citizens. I mean, some of them, I'm sure, are citizens. Maybe some of them are illegal aliens, too. But when you're representing a city of almost 700,000 people and you listen to a few hundred people who say defund the police, this is the defense that feckless Ted offered up 1 year ago.
In total, between the reductions that I directed as a result of the economic slowdown associated with COVID, plus the work that the council did, which we unanimously supported, we reduced the Portland Police Bureau budget by $27 million. That is substantial. So any further reductions are going to have to clear a very high bar from my perspective.
Well, today, here's the high bar. Ted, I think you've actually cleared it. A record number of people in Wheeler Town have now been murdered, and we're not even at the end of the year yet. Wheeler, 1 year ago, listed off lofty goals for what he planned to do. And I think it's telling how ridiculous it sounds today, hearing him say, this is what I plan to do. Well, you know, wish in one hand, spit in the other one, see which one fills up first. And what we all know has actually happened in the real world, and not the fevered imagination of the multimillionaire mayor of this mess. Listen to what he offered up.
We need to redeploy our police officers back to the neighborhood precincts where they're urgently needed. We need to find compassionate and quick ways to get as many people off of our sidewalks as possible and connected with humane care. We need to clean up the litter and the graffiti and the broken glass.
Didn't happen.
And
it got worse.
We need to work with our business owners and operators, large and small business owners and operators and community leaders and others, to reopen our city as quickly and safely as possible as we can under the COVID restrictions.
And you know that today none of that happened. Redeploying the police, meaning getting rid of the gun violence reduction team, which once was called the gang team, but because too many gangs are made up of people of color and the woke folks at City Hall said, we can't have that. We can't have the police arresting people just for committing crimes when too many of them end up being people of color. You know, it's disproportionate. We should have proportionate response. If you're a person of color and you commit crimes, you run with a gang, we should just forget about it. Well, that's exactly what they've done. And the cost has come in real human lives, and it continues to come this way. It has not slowed down at all. But since I'm a glass half full kind of guy, even with violence rising to record levels in most Northwest cities, I do want to point out, thanks to our God-given rights in the U.S. Constitution, at least we don't have to confront when one guy in Australia faced cops at his door, and thankfully he made a video recording of it, demanding that he confess that a picture he had posted to social media showed him, shockingly, attending a public protest against COVID restrictions. Listen just how part of that interchange between this citizen and the police went down.
You've got the cops coming around here to tell me that I've been in a protest.
No, to ask
6 months
you
ago.
To ask if you have been.
Going to a protest. Why are you guys here?
Because
why is the police on my doorstep about a protest?
Yeah. Because
why?
It's illegal.
Black Lives Matter protested 2 weeks before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, was that illegal? Are you knocking on their doors?
Maybe.
No, you're not.
No.
So
it's clearly
so immature. Why are you working for this corrupt government? What are you guys doing? Who are you serving? Are you serving us, or are you serving the corrupt government and health officials?
Now, that was the response he had. The fact is, the police can't do that to Americans. We have Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. But can you imagine being in a place, like I said, glass half full, where police can march up on your doorstep, say, this is a picture you put on your social media account. It appears to show you at a public protest. We don't allow that in Australia. This did happen in Australia, thankfully, not in America. And we are asking you to confess to us that you broke a crime. At least we don't have to put up with that. But what we do have to put up with, the anger of parents and the obstinacy of school boards is building to a crescendo. I want you to understand what's happening. Citizens, and in this case, I've chosen a central Oregon town in Bend, have decided they've had it up to here with what their local school board is doing for the education of their kids, which is not nearly enough, and what they're doing to the kids in the way of political indoctrination. And the chair of that board, Melissa Barnes Dolakia, I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name right, but it appears to be Dolakia. She says, in a democracy, elections represent the will of the people. But in the new playbook, the next course of action is to harass and intimidate those who are elected if they do not represent your views. Hey, guess what, Barnes Dolakia? You've got it right. When you run for a public office, if you can't stand the heat, Ms. Barnes Dolakia, get out of the kitchen. Give up your position. If you don't expect to hear angry parents on occasion, you shouldn't be on the school board. But she says, public engagement is a wonderful thing. Please don't take my words the wrong way. But that's not what we have. This is about harassment, about intimidation, about working to ensure people in elective office do not seek re-election. Yeah, you've got it right. You nailed it. You nailed it solid. When you get elected to a public position and you don't do your job, you can expect to hear from the people who are in the electorate. And if you don't expect that, you need to find a different profession. Coming up in the Northwest Nonsense, Oregon desperately needs a brownout, a Kate brownout, but what we don't need is a New York City carpetbagger. I'll give you the details in just a moment.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
No, I don't want to turn out the lights, but Oregon desperately needs a brownout. A Kate brownout, that is. Term limits written into Oregon's constitution save the state from the prospect of a third disastrous four-year run for Governor Brownshirt. The far-left Democrat displayed both severe indecision combined with a dictatorial attitude once she managed to actually decide on something. Over the last year and a half especially, Kate Brown has claimed the law gives her virtually unlimited emergency powers that never end and never required her to consult with the people's representatives. Even her pet Democrat lawmakers did not disagree with that. They were happy to let Kate ruin the state on her own. So she's out at the end of next year, and a New York carpetbagger plans to take her place. And by the way, one of my emailers suggested, a lot of people don't know what carpetbagger means. I'll explain the origins of that term in a moment. two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Nicholas Kristof did grow up here in the Pacific Northwest in Oregon, and then he left for the next several decades. I think his politics are reason enough to reject his candidacy, but thanks to the real reporting of a real Oregonian, Pulitzer Prize winner Nigel Jaquis, there's an easy way to send Kristof packing. He is not an Oregon resident under the law. He can't run. The Constitution of Oregon says you have to be a resident for 3 full years before you can run for governor. It says that specifically. Well, last November, Kristof voted in New York City. And the laws in New York City say you have to swear under penalty of perjury to being a resident of New York in order to vote there. He did that just last November, 11 months ago. 2 months later, he registered to vote in Oregon. So if you thought having Ron Wyden, New York City resident, as the official U.S. senator from Oregon was bad, wait for this one. Even if you assume registering to vote less than a year ago makes Kristof an Oregon resident eventually, he's out of the running till late 2023. And that means he misses the governor's election next year. Only he claims he is a resident. Kristof claims that paying taxes in Oregon while living 2,000 miles away turns him into a resident for purposes of running for office. I pay lots of taxes in Oregon. I don't claim residency. And no, I'm not interested at all in the job of governor of either state, even though I would welcome the opportunity to debate Nick Kristof again like I did in high school, because back then my debate partner and I used to regularly clean his clock, and I know we could do it again. From Facebook, Dana Feltman writes in, Lars, last thing Oregon needs is somebody from New York coming here thinking they know what we the people want or need. And on Getter, Chuck writes in, Lars, there's a new world coming, one without electricity, fossil fuels, cars, and other modern conveniences. The Amish will soon be holding classes on how to survive with the bare necessities. We'll have a horse and buggy in every garage, oil lamps and wood-burning stoves. Ah, the good old days have returned. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, today I mentioned Ted Wheeler already. Let me mention him again. I know Ted has turned downtown Portland so toxic, and you say, how toxic, Lars? That even the banks want to move out. Umpqua Bank is now combining with a bank called Columbia. The bank will retain the Umpqua name, but will move out of downtown Portland. The bank's move out of downtown, another blow to Portland's core, buffeted by protests, vandalism, homelessness, violent crime, and prolonged pandemic-related office closures. Yeah, I'd want to move out as well. That's how crazy it's become. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest. Now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus. Online, rivercityusa.com/careers. Robbie writes in, President Joe Biden doesn't understand economics. His solution for the supply chain issues? Just work more. It has nothing to do with paying people to stay home. I have worked every day through the pandemic proudly. It's time to cut off these lazy bums who don't want to go out and get one of the 11 million jobs out there. A job, the original stimulus. You should try one sometime. Now, I want to introduce one of our star reporters. We have reporters on from our affiliate stations from time to time. Rosemary Reynolds is with our flagship radio station, FM News 101 KXL. Rosemary, thanks for coming on to explain what happened last night in downtown Portland.
It was supposed to be a memorial for a man who was killed. He was 23 years old. He ended up dying in 2019. He called himself an activist, and the memorial turned out to be a real mess. You should see downtown Portland this morning. Windows broken. Doors broken through, glass all over the place. I mean, it was bad enough. When I went downtown this morning, I could not figure out what was newly broken and what wasn't. And that's because half the city is boarded up. And so this new stuff happened at the post office on Southwest Main at first. On Second Avenue, it was Smile Dentistry that got it. And the Moda Tower, their main front door was smashed. It looked like part of a piece of ice that was laying on the ground with all these little pebbles of ice everywhere.
So let me ask you, how many people were arrested by the police for these multiple crimes?
As far as I know, none. I was checking Twitter all morning this morning. I didn't see a press release, and I didn't see any notification that any arrests were made.
And you'd think if the police had arrested people, they'd have proudly said, hey, by the way, those people who caused all that trouble, they're in custody or they're at least facing charges. So at this point, we have no law enforcement. We have major damage. We have banks moving out of downtown. And it sounds bad. Now, you've also alerted us, the city of Portland, like a lot of governments that all predicted doom and gloom a year ago or so and said, we're all going to be short of money because tax collections are going to be down. Tax collections are actually up. They have about a $62 million surplus. At this point, how much of that money does the mayor or city council plan to put into police?
We don't even know. I mean, everybody's going to be fighting over this money, and I'm sorry I sounded like I was laughing, but it is kind of a joke. This is going to start coming up on October 19th. City council will start looking how to divvy up this pie. We know that many Portlanders want police back. We know that many Portlanders want their fire department to be able to come to a fire with four people, not a staff of two. We also know that now every single firefighter in the city of Portland may end up wearing a bulletproof vest, which isn't anything anybody ever wanted to imagine. But I think people of Portland would want them to be protected, to have that, to have what they need. After all, Lars, you got to think about this. People listening, it's up to you to go to City Hall by email, by phone. Light it up. Light them up. Make them think about where their property tax dollars are going. You're going to get your statement in the mail here in a few days. Look at it. Public safety. You're going to have fire costs. You're going to have police costs on there. Well, where is that money going? They are defunded.
Yeah, they're defunded. And Joanne Hardesty, who hates the cops with a passion, said, well, we've assigned more to patrol. Patrol is fine, but if they don't go after the people with the guns committing the violent crimes specifically, they're not going to change the picture at all. Rosemary Reynolds, thank you very much. She is one of the star reporters at our flagship radio affiliate, FM News 101 KXL. And of course, we broadcast to the whole Northwest. Coming up in a moment is a New York City resident gearing up for a race to run for governor of a Northwest state. We'll talk about more about that in a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to participate in the best conversation in talk journalism, it's easy. Find our Twitter poll, still on Twitter, not on Getter yet, at Lars Larson Joe on Twitter. You can also vote on our website at LarsLarson.com. You can dial in, and if you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS, and naysayers go to the head of the line. Now, Nigel Jaquis is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, not for nothing. Months ago, he identified that a guy by the name of Nicholas Kristof, who lived in the Pacific Northwest decades ago and moved away to find his fame and fortune, and he did, now proposes to perhaps become the next governor, in this case, of the state of Oregon, since we have a governor's election coming up. Nigel, welcome back, and you identified one of the key issues, and that is Nicholas Kristof does not qualify under the law and the Constitution, or does he?
Well, so I had reported that he voted in New York State, where he was living in the November 2020 election. In order to vote in New York, you have to certify that you're a resident of New York. So the Oregon Constitution requires that anybody who runs for governor have been a resident of Oregon for the prior 3 years. So it seemed like the equation didn't work. If he voted in New York last year, he couldn't have been a resident in Oregon for 3 years before the 2022 election. He has hired the Perkins Coie law firm, one of the top law firms in the Northwest, to review the situation. They wrote a 15-page opinion, which you can find on Willamette Week's website, that says, in fact, he does qualify. So I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a constitutional scholar. I am surprised by the opinion, but he thinks he qualifies, and he filed yesterday a political action committee, which is really the first step to officially getting in the race.
I mean, I think there are two reasons to look askance at him. One is his qualifications. His second is his positions on the issues. What should people know about where he would likely take the state, and would he likely take it anywhere that Kate Brown hasn't already taken the state?
Well, it's hard to say because he hasn't gotten into the race and he hasn't established a platform. Based on what he has written and said, I think he would be to the center in the Democratic Party. He, in other words, he'd be a moderate Democrat. He has been pretty critical, for instance, of teachers unions, which is an unusual position for an Oregon Democrat to have. But, you know, obviously he is a Democrat, so he'll be well to the left of many of the people that you might support. But I think he is positioning himself as a change from the machine that has run, that has held the governor's office since Vic Atiyah, and from the Democrats who have controlled the legislature since 2007. So how much of a change, I guess we'll have to wait and see when he gets in.
Yeah,
but
because
he's certainly trying to position himself as an outsider.
Yeah, and I'm wondering about that because it seems to me we do need some outside ideas. I'm just not sure that going all the way to New York City for them. Before we leave the residency issue altogether, you've read through the opinion from Perkins Coie, which, as far as I'm concerned, based on what John Durham's been finding and based on the indictment of one of their attorneys in connection to Hillary Clinton, I think that there's a lot of corruption that can be tied to the Perkins Coie law firm, but they are the official House legal advice for the Democrat Party, which I don't think is a good thing in this case. But does that 15 pages boil down to, I was born there, I went to high school there, and I pay taxes there? Because, you know, by that standard, Nigel, I qualify, although I don't want the job.
His argument is a little more than that. It's that his family has owned a farm in Yamhill County for decades, and that he has always considered himself. One of the subjective parts of the law is, what do you consider your home? And he has said that he always considered Oregon his home, despite living somewhere else for the past quarter century. So we've seen this issue come up with Chris Dudley and Charlie Hales, and in both cases I was disappointed that the authorities that looked at their residency claims didn't appear to take the issue as seriously as you and I might have. And so we'll see with Christoph.
I mean, because you quote the Constitution, and it's not ambiguous at all, is it? It says you have to have been a resident for 3 full years before you run for the office of governor. Well, if he's gonna enter the Democrat primary, then he's talking about running in May of next year, which is considerably less than 3 years. Even if he says my residency was established by my registration to vote in late December of last year, just less than 2 months after he voted in New York City and had to swear he was a resident of that city to be able to cast a vote there.
Yes, you know, again, I'm not a lawyer. I have found the argument that Perkins Coie made on his behalf less than persuasive, but they don't have to persuade me. They have to persuade the Secretary of State and, I guess, the courts if it comes to that.
All right. Now, how does he change? Because I would love to talk to the Democrat candidates. I'd love to talk to Tobias Reid. We've asked for an interview. I'm not holding my breath. Same thing with Tina Kotek. I'd love to ask a few tough questions of her. She's going to run as a Democrat. Again, I'm not waiting for her to come on the show. But we have made the invitation, and the invitation is sincere. How does he change the equation at all if he's running as a centrist Democrat with Kotek off to the far left? And I'm not exactly sure where Tobias Reid falls on that scale.
The perception among people that I've spoken to in Salem and around the state about the race is that he and Tobias Reid are they're both moderates. They're both male. They're not strong union candidates, although Tobias Reid will have some union supporters. So the easy back of the envelope calculation that people that I speak to are making is that this actually helps Tina Kotek, because now there are three candidates who are likely to draw significant support, and two of them look pretty similar to each other, and they're both men. So helpful to Kotek is the analysis that I'm hearing.
Am I right in saying that means that if they're both sort of moderates within the far left wing Democrat Party, which is saying something, it's only moderate in relative terms, that they each pull a lot of the moderate votes to themselves, split them in half, don't have a prayer, and Tina Kotek breezes right up the middle with the far left end of the party?
Well, I think that would be the calculation that many people would make today, yes, that this is helpful to Kotek, and that she entered the race as the favorite because she's been the longest serving Speaker of the House in Oregon history and is very close to the public employee unions who can write very large checks.
So having had a left-wing governor who's acted like a dictator in many ways over the last year and a half and has given Oregonians a real education, how far will they go? About this far. If she's illustrated what the far left will do, does that perhaps make it easier for a reasonable conservative on the other side? And there are a number of people running for the Republican nomination, perhaps to go up against a far left candidate like Tina Kotek.
Well, I think that the governor's popularity numbers, which were extraordinarily low, tells you that people across all political stripes in Oregon are anxious for a change from Kate Brown, and a lot of people would question how much of a change Tina Kotek represents. And so, yes, I think, I mean, it's not clear to me that there's a candidate in the Republican primary that is the obvious front runner for people to coalesce around. And, it, you know, we haven't mentioned the possibility of a third party candidacy of Betsy Johnson, which is also very much on people's minds right now. So I think it's a wide open race. We haven't had a wide open race in the Oregon governor's race for a long time.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. And I'd also know, is there any concrete way to test whether or not Kristof's candidacy, and is that test being done now, to test whether his candidacy is legit or not?
Well, I will be shocked, Lars, if somebody doesn't challenge his candidacy. The first avenue would be the Secretary of State, who oversees elections. And then there is a pretty quick avenue to the courts, is my understanding. So I'll be shocked if nobody tests that. But
let's hope for that one. That's Nigel Jaquess. You can find his reporting at WWeek.com. Coming up, we're going to talk about letters from nurses who are about to get fired as our healthcare system dismantles itself.
Take this jab and stick it. I ain't getting no vaccine. Dumbest thing that I've ever seen. Biden says take the shot or go home, so I'm walking out the door. Take your jab and stick it. I won't take this crap no more. Joe Biden's been in D.C. for going on 50 years, and now he's trying to bring us down, playing on people's fears. I've seen a lot of folks in D.C. lie. I've seen a lot of pay to play. With Democrats, I've had it up to here, and now I got the guts to say, take your jab and stick it. I ain't taking this no more. We still got a constitution that's worth fighting for. It's my choice. Ain't that what the liberals say? So take this jab and stick it. This is still the USA.
That is Jim Gossett.
Take this jab and stick it. Hey, this is still the USA.
Oh, my mistake. That's Jim Gossett, the official parody artist of this radio program, The Lars Larson Show. And welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. You know, I thought that was appropriate, especially because of the letters I've been getting. And I can't begin to do justice to all of them, but I thought I'd share two of them with you. And they stood out because they speak to the human cost of the excesses of Jay Inslee, lame duck Kate Brown, and dementia patient Joe Biden. I got this one, and both of them asked, leave my name off of this. We don't need more trouble than we've got already. A nurse of many years will lose her ability to work, make a living, care for patients, as I have loved doing because I will not get the vax, she writes. Wanted to share with you this policy for the work-at-home people, not the comment about where you live as a disqualifier to the exemption. Secondly, I asked to be antibody tested, as I've had COVID. The response was, at this time, natural immunity is not sufficient and is not accepted. Now, imagine that. Because some other countries do exactly that. They say if you've had it, you've already got natural immunity, it's much stronger than the vaccine, or so the studies say, we'll let you go that way. This one is signed by a concerned mom. Not only will hospital staff be terminated, my daughter finally agreed to take the J&J shot as she's the sole supporter for her family. Since taking the shot, she is still working. However, she was told she'll be laid off for a full month until the vaccine is fully effective. How's that for a thank you to the staff at St. Charles Medical Center that covers Bend, Redmond, Prineville, and Madras, signed a concerned mom. I'm concerned about what they're doing to the healthcare system, not just the airlines, which appear to be under assault because workers are saying, we're not going to take the jab. And then you've got cops and firefighters and paramedics and nurses and doctors and other people who are significant to this society's operation. And the government is saying, no, we're going to take apart all those institutions and let the chips fall where they may. That's out to lunch as far as I'm concerned. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our Twitter poll, and this one, it refers specifically to Nicholas Kristof, but I would apply this to any of the positions in the state, including that of U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Should any Northwest state accept carpetbagger candidates? You can answer the Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go first to Dan. Hey, Dan, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Thanks, Lars. I'm a regular listener. I appreciate all the communication you get out to everybody about things that are happening. I'm interested in talking a little bit about the Moms for Liberty rally that was held in Bend, Oregon, regarding the Bend Lapine School Board. And I just want to say I'm fully in support of what the Moms for Liberty are doing. They to me, it seems like what they're doing is exactly what Americans should be doing, which is voicing their opinion. And, you know, the idea that this is some kind of a violence that the chair was talking about or intimidation, to be honest, the video I saw of the rally, it was very it was low key. It looked like a back to school night for first graders. I mean, it was pretty passive, and I saw no harassment there. It felt a lot like the chair was trying to piggyback on Joe Biden's Department of Justice intimidation with Merrick Garland trying to quiet and chill
sicking the FBI and parents. This I don't know if I'm saying her name right. Dolakia, is that the way she pronounces it?
I don't know. That looks right, but I'm not sure how she.
Okay, so Melissa Barnes Dolakia is saying we don't want to be harassed. Well, guess what, Dan? Up to the point of actually threatening somebody, harassment is part of American political speech. You can stand outside. I don't like it when people are shouted down to the point where they need, you know, you want to hear what they have to say and you can't hear that. But then again, that's a tactic of the left. But if the right shows up and loudly says, this is what we'd like from you. And when the school board says, we're not going to listen to you. A friend of mine, Steve, wrote to me over the weekend. He was watching a school board meeting in Vancouver. And he said a parent stood up, asked the board a question. The board simply sat there, didn't even have the courtesy of a reply to a citizen who had posed a polite question. When you do that, school board members, you're going to hear people loudly shouting when you won't give them good answers. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's your opportunity to join the best conversation in talk journalism. We talk about the issues that are going on, not just here in the Pacific Northwest, but around the world. But I've made a commitment that when we have an election coming up, I would like to talk to every single candidate that is running for one of the major offices here in the Northwest. Washington State does not have a gubernatorial election. Sadly, the voters chose Jay Inslee. That is, of course, if you believe the outcome of the vote by mail in Washington State. I think vote by mail has some major issues. But I'm going to talk to all the candidates, left and right. That assumes that the left-wing candidates, the Democrat candidates or non-affiliated voter candidates, are actually willing to come on and answer a few questions. Amber Richardson is one of those who is going to run for the position of Oregon's governor, but she's got to seek the nomination first. Ms. Richardson, welcome to the program. You're seeking the Republican nomination, right?
That's correct. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm glad to do it. You can find her at VoteOregonFirstForAmber.com, correct?
Correct, and that's four, like the number four.
Right, the numeral four. So I looked over the things that you've taken stances on. It seems that you talk a lot about life issues, about abortion. I hope that your candidacy is not going to be a single-issue candidacy. You have positions on some of the other issues that affect people in the state of Oregon or here in the Northwest.
Absolutely. Before we get started on those issues, I don't mean to take over, but you've been talking a lot on your program with the nurses and stuff, and I did get a call to action. I'm a part of the Southern Oregon First and People's Rights. The Board of Nursing is meeting tonight at 4:30, and they are going to be discussing revoking the nurse's license today for the unvaccinated. And I just think it'd be a good time for Oregon to call. And the number is 971-673-0685. So if anybody feels like they need to call and say, you should not be firing these nurses for being unvaccinated, I think that we need to call. So
I think that's a worthy message, Amber, because we're not just talking about firing nurses. We're talking about taking away their ticket to even be a nurse, at least in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, well, I'm in healthcare too. So I got one of those emails and I thought, you know, I want to talk about issues and I am running, but I got those emails and I'm a part of those kind of organizations and it pisses me off. So,
well, it makes me mad as well. I would love to see some
reports. One of the other things on there, it says also on Wednesday, October 20th, it says that the Oregon Health Authority is going to also meet to bypass parents' consent for vaccination in schools. So I don't really know too much about that. It just says you can go to SouthernOregonFirst.com and get some more information on that. And I think that we need to, parents need to, go on their website, find more about that Wednesday, October 20th, find out information about that. It's a call to action. I got it on my email. We need to all step up and find out what they're doing. So I know we can go back more onto my issues, but when I get those
Action, otherwise you're going to lose all your time. And then people are going to say, Lars, you didn't give her a chance to talk about a run for governor. And I say, Amber decided to burn the time a different way. So go for it. What else do you stand for other than your position in favor of the right to life?
So some of the other issues that are on there is election integrity. I think that we need to get our election system back. I know about most people feel that in the 2020 election, I don't think that it went the way that we thought. I do know that if you look on the Secretary of State website, they did do an audit in 2018, that they did an audit on our election system. Now, when they did the poll, it did say that people were in favor of the mail-in vote, but the poll, I don't believe polls for one thing, because I don't think the polls are fair. It just said that people thought they were in favor of it. I think that was just like a kind of a lazy thing, like, oh yeah, it was cool, we could just stay at home and mail in a vote. Also on that audit that they did, it said that our voter registration system was very fraudulent, that there was a lot of issues with it, and it comes from a Windows like a Windows form from 2008, that the voter registration system is very outdated, and that they are not going to do the governor of our state right now. And the Secretary of State said that they won't do anything about it until 2023. So why?
It's a great question, but Amber, I want you to tell people what you would do as governor. You're not going to be Secretary of State. If you run for the office and you win the office, you're not going to be Secretary of State
Before that, I think right now we need to fix it. So I think that by county, we need to do in-person voting with ID, and we need to process our own elections per county, and we need to send in our elections and then tally up in county by county paper ballots and do our elections before.
I don't disagree with you, except that requires a change in the law, doesn't it?
Well, we'll need our legislators to do that. And the only way we have to put our we the people need to start putting our we the people pants on. And I think that part of the things that we have been doing here in Southern Oregon, especially at the Jackson County Republican Party office, we've been doing these affidavit classes, which unfortunately I wish we had a little bit more people come with these mandates. These affidavit classes really did help in our county with the mandates for the medical, for people in medical. I had to do it for my own job. But these affidavit classes were, and we had Mr. X, who was putting them on, show people that you can stand up for your rights. You do have your rights. And if we start teaching people their rights, then we can make some changes here. So we have to start doing that now before any of the elections, period. Like,
well, because
I know I'm running, but...
The November election, should you get the nomination, is about a year ago, a year from now. Just over
right.
a year from now. None of those
right.
changes is going to happen between now and November of next year. So I need to know, or I need my audience to hear from you, what you would plan to do as governor that is within what the governor can do, assuming that we'll probably still have a Democrat-dominated legislature.
Right now?
Well, no, I'm saying if you run for the nomination, you get the nomination, you run for governor in fall of next year, and you win the office, what do you plan to do?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, come on. We have the best technology in the world. You can't tell me that we don't have the technology to have the most amazing voting system. We literally can save babies' lives while they're in the middle of the womb. We are flying regular people. When I say that, I mean, like, to the moon. We have the capability with our technology today. We have facial recognition on our phones. The fact that they are telling us that we don't have the capability to have an election system that is so automatically, like, perfect is absurd.
You would think we'd be able to do that. That's Amber Richardson. Amber is running for governor of Oregon on the Republican ticket. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails. We'll talk about cities driving people out. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to let you know about something we just learned about just a short time ago. Several people have been killed and others injured by a man armed with a bow and arrow near the capital of Norway. That's Oslo. It's just outside of there. This man has apparently killed four people. He's in custody now. And there are several other people who are wounded as well. And it makes you wonder, I own a bow, not a long bow like this guy. I own a compound, actually I own a couple of compound bows. And I've managed to kill animals with them. But my goodness, now we'll probably have the liberals proposing that we have bow and arrow control in this country, too. Welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. On our Twitter poll, should any Northwest state accept carpetbagger candidates who don't live in this area for any position, let alone the position of governor of the state? Nicholas Kristof has filed for a political action committee, a PAC, and he's seeking to raise money. Apparently, he plans to run for governor of Oregon. He doesn't live in Oregon. He registered to vote in Oregon in December of last year, even though the state constitution says that he has to be a resident for 3 years before running. He says because he has always imagined himself to be a resident of the state, and because he pays taxes in the state, that makes him a resident, which could effectively, I mean, depending on your point of view, could make you a resident of a number of states that you don't live in, but he plans to run. I have a feeling that a complaint will be filed and that this will go to a legal test. Then the question is whether a liberal state like Oregon will say, yeah, you can go ahead and run, even though the Constitution seems to say that you cannot. Let's go to Michael in Vancouver. Hey, Michael, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you.
So, I just had a thought. With 99% of these homeless camps that we have, and they're popping up everywhere, about 99% are probably drug users and abusers, and the other 1% may be looking for work. And
I'd agree with you. Yep.
We put them back across the American-Mexican border because that's a lot of where their drugs are coming from and whatnot. And we take all those hard workers that are trying to come across and put them all to work. And then we'd have it'd be a lot better, wouldn't it?
No. And I'll tell you why. First of all, the people who are coming into our country illegally, if you ask yourself, do you want people to be part of your country? If the media insists on calling them immigrants, a real immigrant to this country comes in legally and obeys the laws. If you come into the country illegally, you identify yourself illegally, you work illegally. I mean, those are the, and probably identify illegally. That's at least three crimes you're committing, having entered what is supposed to be your new home. If you've already, if you're already committing crimes by just coming into the country, working in the country, and identifying yourself, would we trust that person to obey any of the other laws of our country?
That's correct. Good point.
Okay, and as for the people who are drug addicted, look, we've got the people who take the drugs, and I believe you're right, Michael, because Eric Johnson, who did a fantastic documentary now, I think almost 2 years ago, called Seattle is Dying, pointed out that when he talked to people living on the streets, they themselves told him, everybody out here is addicted to drugs or alcohol or both. And and as you said, it probably does include a you know, the rare exception, somebody who was mentally ill and didn't take drugs or alcohol and ended up on the street, even though we have programs, fairly generous programs, to take care of people who have mental illnesses. But many times those people with mental illnesses say, I don't want to take my meds. Well, okay, so your choice to not take your meds when you're on the straight and narrow because you don't like the side effects. I understand that. But if you're a schizophrenic, for example, and many of the schizophrenia diseases are amenable to treatment, but you say, I don't like the drugs. They make me feel fuzzy. They make me feel uncomfortable. They upset my stomach, things like that. I understand. People don't like the side effects of those things that would allow you to live a normal life. And so if you choose not to take them and you've made yourself mentally ill by not, you know, taking those drugs, what should we do with you? And but I would say, according to Johnson, I think hit it right on the head. Most of the people out there are out there because they chose to take drugs and they chose to take alcohol. Now, if you say, well, did they choose to be addicts? I'd say nobody chooses to be an addict. I think everybody who takes drugs, I drink in moderation. I don't take the illegal drugs. But if you do, I'm sure that every person who's ever snorted cocaine or shot heroin thinks, I can handle it. It's only those weaker people who can't handle, say, a job, a family, responsibilities, and shooting up with heroin now and then. It's foolish because you can see plenty of examples, but everybody believes, I'm not going to end up like that meth head that I saw, you know, hanging out on a street corner. So what should we do with those people? But telling them, we're going to put you on the border and we're going to take illegal aliens in and undercut all the law-abiding people of the country, I don't think that's a legitimate choice. Do you?
Yeah, now that we talk about it, it makes sense. And if there was a way to get them legalized in a different, more effective manner.
Well, there is a way. There is a way. But, Michael, here's the question. America takes in over 1 million legal aliens every single year, well over a million. So we're being very generous. We're more generous than every other country on planet Earth. Now, that's real generosity. And when somebody answers that generosity by saying, yeah, but you have to do a bunch of paperwork and jump through some hoops. You have to show that you're capable of earning your own keep, that you're willing to obey the law. If a person says, I don't want to do that, I just want to cut the line. Michael, what do most people in this country think of any kind of line cutting, even the kind of minor stuff at the grocery store or the supermarket, you know, or the movie theater? What do people think of line cutters?
I know. I hear you.
You see, because all you're doing is you're saying my time is more important than your time. So, Michael, if we're on the freeway and I cut you off, I take great pains not to do that. Because I think it's rude. I think it's rude when it's done to me. So I shouldn't be. I should treat other people the way I expect to be treated. So if you if you don't like it when somebody cuts the line at the grocery store or cuts the line at the movie theater, what do you think of somebody who cuts the line to get into your country? Citizenship in this country is not for sale. But if you had to put a price tag on it, what do you think it would be worth?
No, you got definitely a good point. And just a broad aspect, I just love with a lot of these guys and gals that I've worked with that have came across, and I don't know if they're legal or not because I don't ask them, but man, their worth ethic compared to some of these guys in the tents and the cities is just, you know, so that's the main thing I was seeing.
And the question would be, but Michael, I want to add to that. There are a lot of people who behave very well in certain circumstances. Prison inmates tend to be very well behaved inside a prison because if they step out of line, there are real consequences. When somebody is here illegally and they say, boy, that person really works hard. He shows up early. He works hard. He collects his check. Because he's here illegally, he wants to maximize his earnings before he gets kicked out of the country, and he's aware he could be kicked out at any time. If you legalize his status, will that work ethic stay, or will he say, well, now that I'm legal, I don't have to show up early. I don't have to show. I don't have to work hard. Maybe his work ethic will stick through all that, and maybe it will not. Thanks for the call, though. I love a great naysayer. Coming up in just a moment, we got more to talk about. Does giving a student an F make the teacher a racist? We're going to talk about that coming up next. I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Email talk@LarsLarson. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's not a pleasure to watch what is being done to our nation's schools. I mean, almost anywhere you go in this country, there are some rare exceptions. What you see is you see school boards and school administrations deciding we are going to indoctrinate kids to a certain line of beliefs. And among those beliefs that say getting an F from the teacher is a racist action by that teacher. I mean, this is the kind of nonsense that's being shoved on your kids. And worse than that, it's being shoved on your kids in school that under the state laws that those states have to follow, they're obliged to provide public education. I mean, it's not in the U.S. Constitution, but in most state constitutions and certainly in state law, it says every kid in a state has a right to go to a public school if they choose, except that, and by the way, the parents and the other taxpayers who are not parents have to pay the bill, no matter what is offered up to the kids. Well, some parents have pushed back. They've said this is not the way we want our schools run, to which they've heard from major politicians and minor politicians, including Joe Biden's Secretary of Education, the guy who's running, Terry McAuliffe, who's running for governor of Virginia. They've all said parents have absolutely no say in what we teach your kids. Really effectively telling you they're not your kids anymore. They are kids that belong to the government. That's not exactly American, as near as I can tell. I thought we'd talk about that with Lindsay Burke, who's director of the Center for Education Policy at Heritage. Lindsay, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me back.
Is it literally the truth that a student getting an F from a teacher is now accusing the teacher of at a university in this case, at a middle school, that the teacher was acting in a racist manner for giving out an F for poor work?
So according to the Sunrise Park Middle School's website, this is a middle school near St. Paul, Minnesota, if you hand out grades of F, that this is perpetuating systemic racism. And so the school has decided that they will no longer give out F for the lowest quality work. And they're just lopping off the bottom of the grading scale, basically eliminating the 0 through 49 percentile in their grading system. And so they will no longer take into account things like student behavior or tardiness or whether an assignment was completed on time. And they will no longer factor any of that into a student's grades if it means handing out an F, because that would, according to the school, perpetuate systemic racism.
So, Lindsay, you give us a specific example from Minnesota. Is this something that's being pushed around the country in various school districts to one degree or another?
Yeah, it is. I mean, this came in Minnesota after this particular school did what's called an equity audit. And these equity audits are gaining in popularity with public schools and school districts across the country. And an equity audit, if you're not familiar with it, this is a tool that some schools are using to assess what they see as gaps in equity work, they call it. So that would include things like the school climate, reviewing whether or not the school has, quote, culturally relevant pedagogy, looking at achievement gaps, and then disparities in discipline outcomes. And so this middle school did an equity audit. In the wake of that audit, determined that they needed to eliminate the grade of F because it was perpetuating systemic racism. But it's not the only place to do it. We're seeing in states like California and Oregon. Oregon recently just eliminated math and reading requirements for graduation. In California, and their new statewide ethnic studies curriculum, they reference something called a pathway to equitable math instruction.
that basically says getting the right answer or teacher control over the classroom or requiring students to show their work, that that is all evidence of how mass classrooms maintain white supremacy. So it is not exclusive to Minnesota. Unfortunately, we're seeing it in other states across the country.
And let me guess, when they do the equity audit, they say, why, we've looked at all the test scores from all your kids and we've looked at them through a racial lens, and it seems that you have an awful lot of black and brown students who are not making the grade. Some of them are getting Fs, or maybe a disproportionate number of black and brown students are getting Fs. You've got to get rid of that problem. So rather than saying, well, let's see if we can get some extra tutoring for those kids, you say, we'll just get rid of the Fs. And maybe someday they'll get rid of Ds as well. Everybody can be a C student because we don't want talented and gifted kids, right?
Right. And this is really, I think, at the heart of it. I mean, this, when George Bush said, you know, 20 years ago that this was the soft bigotry of low expectations, that's exactly what we're seeing in play here. And look, all of this does come back to critical race theory, because this aligns with the tenets of CRT, because critical race theory holds that any disparity in student outcomes is a result of discrimination. So it really is in that vein. And not only will these equity audits say time and again that your school is not living up to certain standards of equity, but they will, of course, suggest that your school or school district should hire more chief diversity officers. And so we're seeing this in schools, in K-12 schools across the country, which is really a process of them replicating what we have seen in higher ed for a long time now, which is this proliferation of diversity, equity, and inclusion staff in universities and massive administrative bloat as a result.
What about this claim? And I've heard it 100 times. I mean, I've seen some school administrators admit, yes, we're teaching CRT. Or worse than that, they say, we're not teaching a CRT curriculum, but everything we do in every part of our system is through a lens. And this is the way I've seen administrators describe it in memos. Everything is through a lens of CRT, meaning that you don't have a CRT class. You could just say, get rid of that class or get rid of Ibrahim Kendi's books. But you have to get rid of the entire system that they're looking at this whole mess through, saying, well, if these kids aren't doing well, it's not because they're not hitting the books hard enough. And it's not because they're not doing their homework every night. It's because the whole system is racist. And that's what creates the bad outcomes for black and brown kids.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then if you look at the way that critical race theory is being applied, and that's really where it becomes problematic, is when it's being applied in K-12 schools, it is being applied in such a way that children are being grouped into these affinity groups based on their race, which really, I think, does run afoul, and if it's not even afoul, illegal, but runs afoul of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So we're seeing these affinity groups do that. We're seeing compelled speech on the part of students who are required to affirm the tenets of CRT, which, of course, runs counter to the First Amendment as well, so certainly on dubious legal grounds. But all of this, I think, runs counter to what we know is good public policy. If we really care about equipping children with the tools they need to be successful, do 180 from what Minnesota has done. Florida did this 2 decades ago, where they said, if you as a child in third grade cannot read, we will not advance you on to fourth grade. So they eliminated social promotion, and minority kids in Florida did so much better than the rest of the country. They outpaced their non-minority peers by double digits over the past 2 decades in terms of their academic achievement.
Yeah, because if you get held back because you can't do the work, if they advance you on and you say, I didn't get math in third grade, I didn't completely understand the way my classmates did. Now in fourth grade, I'm completely lost because they're assuming I know third grade math. Hold you back for a year, you may roll into fourth grade and be a math star.
That's right. And so Florida said, we are not going to socially promote kids anymore. You're going to have to demonstrate that you have mastered whatever it is that you need to master in third grade before we move you forward. And oh, by the way, if your school's not equipping you to be able to do that, we are going to enable you to exercise school choice. And that was, of course, the other key ingredient to Florida's success. Florida used to be 44th in the nation in terms of academic outcomes just 2 decades ago. And now, depending on what metric you use, they're in the top five. And all of that does come back to giving families options, to enabling them to select into learning environments that are safe and effective and meet their needs and align with their values and hopes and aspirations for their children.
Absolutely right. That's Lindsay Burke from the Heritage Foundation, Director of the Center for Ed Policy. Lindsay, thanks very much. We'll be back with your phone calls and emails in a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Just serendipitously, I had planned to talk about the massive problems that are being created deliberately by the governments in Oregon and Washington, shoving employees out the door. The vaccine mandates, and by the way, about an hour ago, I got an email from Multnomah County, and they were just patting themselves on the back. Look at this. Look at the level of vaccination we've achieved, 92%. And I wrote a note back, and I said, hey, anytime you put a gun to somebody's head and say, I'm going to take away your job, your paycheck, the support for your family, and maybe even your entire career in the case of nurses, maybe in that case, if you put a gun to somebody's head, they're likely to do whatever it is you tell them to do, no matter how right or wrong you might happen to be. Now, I just got an email from Elena Martinez, and you might have heard her on the show earlier, a couple of days ago. Elena Martinez is the president of the Corrections Workers Union in the state of Oregon, not the biggest union. They're not SEIU. They're not the purple-shirted folks. The corrections workers have said, look, we want to have some latitude in whether or not we take the jab. Now, when I told you about that yesterday, and we posted that interview yesterday from a school board chairman in Crook County who said that over 20% of his workforce in a smaller school district, you know, but it's still a sizable school district, employs over 500 people. They had over 100 people ask for a religious exemption. And unlike a lot of the school districts in places like Seattle and Portland and Eugene and Spokane, they actually honor those religious exemptions. And do you know what's happened? Crook County Schools have managed to operate. Well, here's the Corrections Workers Union, Elena Martinez, who sent me a note a moment ago saying, Lars, I'm headed to court at 3 p.m. to challenge and stop Brown's mandate. That's Governor Brown's mandate. TRO, which stands for Temporary Restraining Order Hearing, wish us luck. Well, I do wish Elena Martinez and her members luck. And you might say, Lars, Elena Martinez, she's with the labor union. I've always said, if you want to belong to a union, I think there are lots of reasons as a worker not to belong to a union. This is one of the few times when I'd say individual workers would have had a tough time getting the money together, hiring an attorney, going to court the way the AOCE is going to court to challenge Governor Brown's mandate and say our workers have a right to not only a choice about their own medical decisions, but they have a right to say to you, we would like a religious exemption. And you've noticed all the problems that have been created. And after the last year and a half, after riots and arson and looting from Antifa and BLM, after a pandemic, after now the election, which raised so many people's concerns about election fraud, because we believe that November 3rd was an example of election fraud. I mean, all of these problems we've got, a wide open border, literally millions of illegal aliens who have already entered the United States, and those are just the ones we know about. When you have a country that has this many problems, you know, the old adage is, if you find yourself in a hole, the first thing you need to do is stop digging, because then if you keep digging, if you're not a dummy, the hole gets even deeper. Well, unfortunately, the Democrats have said to themselves, and Joe Biden, his spokeswoman, actually said it today. Do we have that soundbite from Jen Psaki where she's talking about the fundamental change that Joe Biden plans to bring about? I think this relates to it. Now, I'll tie it all together for you. Play that soundbite if you don't mind, Bryce.
The president doesn't prefer then one avenue or the other.
The president wants to make fundamental change in our economy, and he feels coming out of the pandemic is exactly the time to do that. And if we don't do it now, if we don't address the cost of childcare, to go back to Josh's question earlier, if we don't address the climate crisis, if we don't ensure that universal pre-K is a reality now, we're not going to have the same opportunity to do it for some time.
Now that's Peppermint Patty, Jen Psaki, saying, is that Elena Martinez on the phone right now, Bryce? Because if it is, I'm going to grab that call right now. If it's not, we'll move on. But What she's saying is Joe Biden wants to fundamentally change America's economy. And the first thing anybody should ask when anyone in your life says, I want to make a fundamental change in how we do this, is this change one I'm going to like or not? Elena Martinez joins me now. She's on her way to court. I'm not going to hold her up. Ms. Martinez, welcome back to the program as president of the union that represents corrections workers. What is a judge going to look at, or this hearing going to look at, an hour from now?
You know, only time can tell. I have no idea. I'm hoping that they rule in our favor and continue to allow us to have the right to choose for what we want to do with our bodies.
You're asking in this hearing for the judge to issue a temporary restraining order. What would you like to restrain?
To stop the mandate so that we don't have to continue to go through with this and lose our careers over an injection.
I'd agree with you, and I applaud you for doing this. What have your lawyers told you about your prospects?
They're optimistic, and, you know, we're not going to stop. If this doesn't go through, we're going to continue going. We're headed to federal court as well.
Well, I think you should, because Ms. Martinez, if you're in front of a state judge, you're almost certainly in front of a judge appointed by a Democrat governor of one kind or another. Might even be a Kate Brown appointee, but I don't know if you saw the federal judge yesterday who ruled that the mandate in New York State does not apply and is not valid. That judge granted a TRO. I think you've got a good shot at it.
I do, too. I'm very, very hopeful.
Anything else you want to tell folks about what your members want out of their government?
They want to be able to continue with their careers and serving the public and protecting the public all the while remaining with their rights to choose.
Ms. Martinez, good luck to you. We'll look for the results. She's going to court at 3 o'clock. If a judge issues a TRO, then Kate Brown's mandate, at least for some, goes away. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and we are live on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to get your calls. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, at least for Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, you're certainly welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Today, our Twitter poll, should any Northwest state accept carpetbagger candidates for the position of governor? And frankly, I'd add almost any other important elected position to that. I'd say no to that question. And I did get, before I go to calls, I did get a note from somebody who said, Lars, people may not realize what you're meaning when you say carpetbagger. It's an old term. It is. I mean, it was common when I was a kid and certainly in the 20s, in my 20s, 30s, and 40s, that you'd describe a carpetbagger candidate. It actually goes back to the times right after America's Civil War, when an awful lot of opportunists from northern states would go into the southern states that had been badly damaged during the Civil War, and they would show up and say, I'm going to show you how to make all this better. And many of them, I'm sure, were there for legitimate reasons. A certain percentage of them, maybe even a majority, were there to take advantage and get a lot of money. And oftentimes, these carpetbaggers would show up, and since they didn't have the money for luggage, they would literally take a piece of a carpet and they would fashion it together to make a suitcase out of it to hold their clothes and their belongings. And they became known as carpetbaggers. That is somebody showing up with nothing who was promising, I'll show you how to run your state or your city or whatever. And all they were doing was there to fleece you. And I described Nicholas Kristof, columnist for the New York Times. He's going to take a leave from that. It appears he is now going to run for governor of Oregon, and he's not a resident of the state of Oregon. He voted in New York City on November 3rd, 2020, and I'm reasonably sure he probably voted for Joe Biden. There's no way in the world he voted for Donald Trump. And then on toward the latter part of December, so just over 9 months ago, he re-registered as a resident of Oregon. Well, you have to be a resident for 3 years under the state constitution to run for governor. But his attorneys from that great Seattle law firm of Perkins Coie, you know Perkins Coie, the one who one of their lawyers has now been indicted for lying to the FBI. I don't think he works at Perkins Coie anymore, but he did when he did the things that caused him to come under indictment. after an investigation. Perkins Coie is also the firm that took money from the DNC and from Hillary Clinton, and they used it to hire Fusion GPS, which then hired Christopher Steele, that came up with the now infamous and fictional Russia dossier, where they got information from the Russians, fed to them allegedly from the Russians to Christopher Steele, from Christopher Steele into the dossier, from the dossier through Fusion GPS to try to affect the outcome of an election. So if you want to think about foreign interference in our elections, that's a great example. And I think Perkins Coie was right in the thick of it. And they're the ones saying, oh, no, no, Nicholas Kristof, he's a perfectly good candidate. The fact that he's always thought of himself as a resident of Oregon, even though he hasn't lived here in decades, that makes him a resident. And if you accept that kind of legal reasoning, I'd love to hear the naysayer call. In any case, should any Northwest state accept carpetbagger candidates? I would say no. Today's Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's start with Slim. Hey, Slim, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Lars, I'm a journeyman lineman down here in Salem, and these mandates are going to be affecting the electrical grid. Right now, Bonneville Power Administration, they provide a lot of power for the western states.
They do.
And they're looking at a mandate. I work for a privately held utility. We're not facing a mandate yet, but, back in February, we had a pretty devastating ice storm.
Yep. Was that an all-hands-on-deck kind of situation where we need every lineman and linewoman out there fixing lines right now, or people don't have their power?
Absolutely. We brought in, I believe, 300 contract crews from all over the nation to help us out. But imagine having a car hit pole, or an underground outage, or you get a tower go down, BPA. BPA is like the first domino. They're facing the mandate because they're federal government. And I just wonder, we got first responders, cops, firemen, whatnot, and they're awesome. I'm not going to take anything away from them. But you take away the journeyman linemen to get the wire back in the air when somebody hits a pole or the underground cable burns up to your house. A lot of my coworkers are definitely against this mandate, and I would support my brothers at BPA.
Well, I'll tell you what, you didn't happen to hear the email that I read yesterday from somebody at BPA. I had to leave the guy's name off of it, but he was saying, look, we're up against this and we're going to lose. He says, we've got 3,000 linemen out there, and I think that number is real. We've asked BPA for a response. He says they're going to lose a massive number of absolutely critical people who they might be able, he says people at substations, the people who turn the power back on to parts of the grid that have been damaged after the fix is in. And I take him at his word that he's saying we're going to lose a lot of these people. And then the Northwest, the next big storm is going to put us in a world of hurt.
Absolutely. And I think what appalls me, at least at BPA, I believe the people that are pushing the management, they're still working from home. Let's remember that we never went home. We worked through fires, COVID, ice storms, and I'm not saying my job's more important than anybody else's, but it's pretty important if you want your power on.
Well, and Slim, I'm with you, because even the people like us who have natural gas heat, that nat gas furnace does not work without electricity. It's got a brain that has to be powered. It's got a fan that has to be powered. And your food doesn't stay cold, and your freezer doesn't stay froze if you don't have electricity. So you take just those two things in your house, and for people with electric water heat, there's no hot water either. And in many homes, if there's no hot water, there's also no cook stove. And so you lose that stuff in the dead of winter, and you got no heat, and your food's getting rotten, and your freezer is unfreezing, and the heat doesn't work, and you can't cook dinner, you've put people in a really bad situation. If they do this, look, Slim, I understand what you meant, that with the federal mandate, the president had the right. It was the wrong thing to do, but Joe Biden signed an executive order covering all his federal employees. But the rest of this thing, the one on OSHA, I don't know if you've heard my explanation for that. That rule that Joe Biden bragged about a month and now 4 days ago does not today exist. They have not written it. And there's a reason they didn't write it, because the minute they write it, There are 27 Republican attorneys general who plan to take it to court. And the history of those OSHA ETS rules is they get thrown out by the courts all the time. So Joe Biden has a strategy. He gets the whole country, the private companies, the 100-plus private companies, to go ahead and behave like there is a rule when there is no rule. And the reason they don't want to write the rule is because they know the minute they write it, it's going to get wiped out by a judge. Thanks so much for the call, and I appreciate your work more than you know. Coming up, what happens when the police, not yet in America, start challenging citizens to confess that they've been involved in a public protest? We'll get to that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. I want to share something with you, and I want to stress this did not happen in the United States yet. Although I think all of you have been paying attention, know that the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, announced that they're going to go after parents who stand up and protest at school board meetings because the National School Boards Association has labeled them domestic terrorists if you simply loudly and proudly stand up and tell your school board that you don't like what they're doing to your kids. I want to put that in context, that while we're used to being able to, you know, protest if we like, you can't break the law, you can't burn things down, although Antifa can, you can't kill people, although Antifa and BLM appear to be connected to both murders and assaults in the riots over the last year and a half, but in almost every other place on the planet, you don't have those same rights. So let me tell you what happened in this audio. It goes with video, but there was a homeowner in Australia. And as you know, Australia has cracked down on COVID hard. And not only cracked down on COVID, they've cracked down on anybody who goes out and protests and says, we don't like what the government is doing to us. And just so you don't take your God-given constitutional rights here in America, which do come from God, they do not come from the government, they come from God, understand that in other countries, it's not the same way. So in Australia, a man goes to his front door, opens the front door, and there's two cops. And they're saying to him, we see this picture you posted on social media from 6 months ago. It appears you were at a protest, and you were at the protest illegally. And in America, the idea of illegal protest? No protest in America is illegal until and unless you commit some other crime, like you assault somebody or you burn something down. If there's no other crime, you can protest all you want. Not so much in Australia. Take a listen, and we did have to take some language out of this. Take a listen to the way the interchange between this citizen in Australia and two police officers demanding that this man incriminate himself in being present at an illegal protest. Listen to this.
You've got the cops coming around here to tell me that I've been in a protest.
No, to ask
6 months
you
ago.
To ask if you have been.
Going to a protest. Why are you guys here?
Because
why is the police on my doorstep about a protest?
Yeah.
Why? Black Lives Matter protested 2 weeks before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, was that illegal? Are you knocking on their doors?
Maybe.
No, you're not.
No.
So
it's clearly
so immature. Why are you working for this corrupt government? What are you guys doing? Who are you serving? Are you serving us, or are you serving the corrupt government and health officials?
See, that's the situation that they find themselves in. And thank God we have those God-given rights to protest, to peaceably assemble, to petition our government for redress of grievances. They don't have them even in a fairly civilized country like Australia. They don't have the kind of rights we do. And I worry that we're going to lose those rights here when you have people like Merrick Garland and of the Joe Biden administration saying, if you go and protest loudly at a school board meeting, why, you just might have the FBI show up on your doorstep because we don't like the fact that you're objecting to something your government is doing. And when you start telling them, I've got the right to peaceably assemble, I've got the right to petition my government for redress of grievances, are they going to actually respect that? Because I don't think Joe Biden respects the Constitution. He's already been slapped down 3 times in the last 2 months by the U.S. Supreme Court for doing things that are unconstitutional. On DACA, on mandates, and other things, he has been slapped down hard by the U.S. Supreme Court. If you think Joe Biden respects your constitutional rights, I think you better think about that again. And on that note, let's go to Wenatchee and talk to Al, who's listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Al, what do you have to say today?
Lars, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just heard you say something about that Oregon school board personnel that made the comment that just claws at my neck every time I hear it. When they say the United States is a democracy, we never have been a democracy.
That's true. The United States is a
constitutional republic.
Yep.
Exactly. And the fact that somebody that's in charge of our kids does not know the difference makes me angry. It's just ridiculous that they're out there. They don't teach civics anymore in school. I don't understand why.
I mean, I do.
I had to go through
as
a senior.
Al,
they don't want anybody to know it.
Al, if we assume that the schools are being run by the teachers' unions, and the teachers' unions side with the Democrats every single time, can you imagine how much blowback they would get from young Americans if they came out of a school system that actually educated those young Americans? We live in a constitutional republic, a representative form of government, and that these people, these citizens, have rights, and we have to respect those rights. And then they want to teach in class to kids, you should do what the government tells you to do. If you've got brown or black skin, you are oppressed. If you have white skin, you're part of the evil systemic racism that is America. If you can't teach kids that, if you have to teach them they have rights, that skin color doesn't matter, that all Americans are equal in the eyes of the law, no matter what their skin color, their gender, their ethnicity, or where they go to church, or whether they go to church, that if you teach kids that, they're going to stand up and object when the government starts telling them what to do. And they also, if you teach even the most basic thing out of the Constitution, the government derives its power to govern from the consent of the governed. If a teacher actually went over that and got to the point where every kid in class understood, so if we don't consent to what the government is doing to us, that removes the government's ability to govern us? Yes, you have a right, and that you have a right to petition your government for redress of grievances. So one of the kids says the teacher, well, my mom and dad went to the school board meeting, and they were angry. They held up a sign, and they yelled, and they got arrested, or they got investigated by the FBI. Is that right, teacher? Well, the teacher wants to be true. Do you think that teacher, if the teacher's a conservative, they may say, well, you're right. Your parents had a right to do that. If they weren't threatening to kill somebody, if they were just standing there loudly and proudly, you know, objecting to something the school district, which is, you know, one of the most basic, you know, grassroots level kinds of government entities in America. Yes, your parents have a right to do that. The teachers' unions don't want you telling kids that they should believe that, do they?
No. They don't. And my dad ran a large school district, was a school board president for a 6A school down in Texas, and he was exactly behind that. I mean, he knew that kids had rights and they didn't do this. And what I don't understand now is that they want to take all this away from us. The country that you and I grew up in is not the same as it is now. And it's sad. It's truly sad.
It is sad. And Al, I fully expect, I don't say I want to have America just like it was, you know, when I was born in 59 or when I graduated high school in 77. I'm not saying that. The country is going to change. But the bedrock of our entire country, the longest lasting Republican form of government in the world, the longest lasting republic in the world, bar none, an exceptional country that, as JFK said, struck out with the revolutionary idea that the people got their rights from God and not from the generosity of the government. He was a Democrat, but they'd never let him in the Democrat Party today. Al, thanks so much for the call. Glad to have you with me. 866, hey Lars, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Coming up next, does Joe Biden want America's to have dirty dishes? We'll be back with that in a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And Joe Biden has so many problems right now. He's got a border problem. He's got a problem with the way he exited Afghanistan. And by the way, there's still some school kids, American school kids, who are trapped over there. He's got a problem that his party, thank goodness, has not been able to pass the massive tax increases that they're proposing or the massive new government spending that they're proposing. So with all those problems and a vaccine mandate problem as well, I guess dirty dishes might fall somewhere near the bottom of that list. Although if you're an American citizen, maybe dirty dishes rise a little higher. Grover Norquist is the president of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, welcome back, and tell us what dirty dishwashers have to do with the federal government. Grover? Did I lose Grover? Oh, shoot. Hang on a second. Grover, are you there? Well, it sounds like I might have lost him altogether. Okay. Okay, I'll go. Ah, he's on a different line. You switch lines on me. Hey, Grover, welcome back to the program, and tell me what the federal government has to do with people's dirty dishes.
Well, they make it difficult for people to buy or impossible for people to buy a dishwasher that actually washes dishes on a timely basis. You may remember when a dishwasher would require 1 hour to clean and dry a load in the dishwasher.
Yep.
Now the government under Obama and the Democrats decided to put an executive order in under the Department of Energy, because we all have to save energy the same way, okay? You can't save energy by turning off your lights or doing this. But everyone should have a dishwasher which reduces the amount of energy you use, not reduces, oh, I don't know, the amount of time it takes to do something. You know, imagine if they ran the electric chair this way. Well, we're going to save a lot of money. It'd just take half a week to fry the guy. So it's going to take you not an hour to wash your dishes. I noticed this recently. I got a new dishwasher. 2.5 hours. And frankly, it doesn't wash as well as it used to. And this is because you had some government bureaucrat decide the key thing is not consumer sovereignty. Not some consumers would want speed. Some would want less. I don't mind how long it takes. Make it less expensive in terms of energy or water. There are any number of ways to do this. Some of the folks who manufacture it, you know, if everybody's told they have to have a crappy dishwasher in terms of how long it takes, well, we can make those and compete on cost with crappy dishwashers that take forever. But it's just, what in the world is that? Where in the Constitution does it suggest that the federal government, and not even Congress, but the federal government with some bureaucracy would say, we want you to have this kind of dishwasher. And by the way, this kind of dishwasher is allowed and this kind is not. The Trump people said, you know what? You should be able to have the kind of dishwasher you want. If you want one that's faster, that should be legal, not required. You can do anything you want, by the way. You make your own dishwasher if you want. You can wash your own dishes if you want. You don't have to have a machine. My grandparents never had a dishwashing machine. They did their own washing of dishes. Up to you. And the Obama people are coming in. How about the Biden people are coming in going, you know what? No, you don't get to make these choices. People who are better and smarter than you will make these choices. The same thing with the shower heads. I don't know if you ever got onto some of these shower heads.
Oh, yeah, the 1 gallon a minute shower heads that they require, and they're going to constrain the amount of water you're allowed to bathe in. So you can't have a 3 gallon per minute shower head and take a 5 minute shower, but you can have a 1 gallon per minute and take a 20 minute shower and actually use more water. But again, they've taken the choice away from you about what kind of shower head you want to have.
I mean, they have hearings. You send letters in. A couple thousand people sent letters in on both sides of that issue. I'm sorry. The American people didn't. First of all, nobody should vote on what kind of car you have or dishwasher or light bulbs or shower heads. The whole point of a free market is you get to decide. What are we all going to play the same card game on Tuesdays? And that's some law?
I guess. But let me ask you something, Grover.
Everybody has to do the same thing.
Since a lot of this came about during Obama-Biden, and now we have Biden-Harris or Harris-Biden, whichever way you want to look at it, I think the second was probably more accurate. Do they plan to take this even further than Obama did?
Well, right now I just know that they're rolling the other thing back, the idea of a choice. So now you're back to what Obama had. But there's no reason, if you're a bureaucrat, where you can sit around and twiddle your thumbs all day. Why not say, did we say 2.5 hours? I'll bid you 3.5 hours to wash dishes and dry, for crying out loud. Because then we use even less energy. You know what? If we do dripping instead of washing, that would take less water, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it would take all night to wash your dishes. I mean, this is the kind of stuff. Yeah. And like you said, people like choices. I know people who want the most dead quiet dishwasher they can get. And less people think it's only about dishes. It's about clothes. It's about hot water heaters. It's about virtually every appliance and every device that you can think of that the Department of Energy wants to specify, this is what you get. And you say, but I don't want that. I want something different. And they say, too, and the marketplace is happy to supply me with something different, except the Department of Energy says it's illegal to sell that to you.
Why does anybody who wakes up in the morning wanting to tell other people how to run their lives?
Bureaucrats.
The bureaucrats who do this, the lobbyists who push these laws, they really get a thrill out of pushing other people around and making them do things that they don't want to do. I don't have that gene. I don't get it.
I don't get it. And Grover, let me throw one more into you to bring in the millennial crowd and maybe even younger. Mm-hmm. Do you know that they've actually made it illegal to sell certain kinds of desktop computers? The ones that are the high-powered gaming computers that have the high-powered graphics card and sound card and all this stuff. There are some of them that are literally illegal to buy. And you say, why are they illegal? Do they have pornography on them? Do they communicate with the Chinese communists? No. They use more energy for playing video games than Americans are allowed to use. And you say, I pay the bill to the electric company every month. Can I make my choice about how I want to use my energy? And they say, no, we're going to make it for you.
I hadn't heard of that one. We're going to run into more and more of this whole nanny state thing where the government wants to tell you what you can think and what you have to say and learn your pronouns. This monumental pushing people, it's like something out of East Germany. I mean, it's really annoying and tedious. And I worry sometimes that people just think they'll get mad at the company that makes it. Go, oh, why are they making lousy, you know, shower heads? Why are they making lousy dishwashing machines? Well, because your elected officials let them, encourage them, pass laws that told the Department of Energy to go do this sort of thing. And I don't know how in the world we need to undo this step by step. When the President Trump raised those questions, he was mocked by the press. You know, so that's not presidential. Maybe it shouldn't be done by the federal government, but he's objecting to you doing it. He's trying to undo something that you thought the federal government ought to get involved in.
Well, this may be a conversation for a longer segment, but why aren't the companies standing up and saying, if you're not happy with the kind of dishwasher you're getting, the federal government made us do it that way. Talk to them. Why isn't the industry saying anything about it?
Well, in some cases, you've got states like California that do something really goofy, okay? And then somebody comes in and says, what if we only did half stupid and then put it on the whole country? And the manufacturers go, we don't want to have to make 50 different washing machines based on what states you're in. So we'll take the half stupid thing instead of the 100% stupid in California and the 100% stupid in New York, and everybody else gets different stuff, because that's not easy to run a factory that way either.
No, it isn't. That's Grover Norquist, the president of Americans for Tax Reform. We'll be back in a moment with your phone calls on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Marquee Hot Tubs. They'll give you the ultimate hot tub and swim spa experience. Visit online or one of their three locations, MarqueeHotTubs.com. Now to your calls, because there is so much on the agenda right now, including a rather interesting story that broke late today. It has to do with Larry Miller, who is, he's the former head of Jordan Brand. Ex-Trailblazers president, current Jordan Brand chairman Larry Miller has shared a dark secret. He admits that he killed a man when he was 16 years old, hid it from his closest friends, including Michael Jordan, until recently. The incident happened in September of 65. He talked to Sports Illustrated about it, said he was a gangbanger. He was seeking retaliation after a friend was stabbed and killed in West Philly. So he downed a bottle of wine, grabbed his gun, went on a hunt for a rival gang member, and said he ended up shooting and killing the first person he saw. But clearly he turned his life around and reformed himself at least to take up a very high level of responsibility in the jobs that he has held in the last half century. So we'll have to explore that more when I've had a chance to check it out tonight. That story just breaking this afternoon. Rick's on the line from Auburn. Hey, Rick, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for having me. I don't have a lot of time. I have a long story I could go into, but what dawned on me based on where I would go with it is, have you had a chance to have a dialogue with many lawyers on the show to discuss all the international, national, and state level of laws, CFRs, RCWs that are being broken by not only the governor, but also state officials.
You're talking about with the vaccine mandates. That's the one piece you left out. And have we talked about the Nuremberg codes and all that? Yes. But the problem is, Rick, there's no enforcement of international laws, nor do I want there to be enforcement of international laws. And here's why. The United States is a sovereign country. It makes its own laws. States are sovereign within the United States, and they make their own laws. We're not held to, you know, to follow laws written by the UN or written by any other international tribunal. If it's a treaty that the United States has signed on to, that would actually affect things. And treaties are awfully dangerous. But, you know, I'll tell you what, when you've got your thoughts together on it and you want to get right to a point instead of just asking me questions, let's do this another day, maybe First Amendment Friday. Let's go to Gage. Hey, Gage, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I was calling in. I got a question. My fiance is in the property management industry. She and me were in a discussion. She says that the writ moratorium is over as of July 30th. So anything that is not paid after July 30th can be evicted for at the beginning of the year.
Well, because I'd have to go back and double check, but I think both Jay Inslee and Kate Brown extended through the first. I think the feds, to whatever extent they could, because the courts have not been real open to this idea. But what's the relevance? She's in the business. She ought to know, right?
Yeah, well, we just go back and forth because I hear stuff from your show and I relay it to her. We have basically debates on it, and she says it's over. And I think
it's not over until January 1, according to Joe Biden, according to Kate Brown and Jay Inslee. And by the way, don't hold your breath, Gage, because if you don't think they're going to push it out again, because that's what they've been doing for the last year and a half. They started off with, well, we're going to have a moratorium till the end of summer last year. And then they extended it again. And they just kept on extending it to where now they have, at least in theory, extended it through the end of the year. And you say, well, so all those people who owe in many cases, tens of thousands of dollars in back rent are going to suddenly pay up and become, you know, paying tenants again. The bigger their debt becomes, the less likely people in government, especially Democrats in government, are to say, well, you have to start paying now, because I think they So I would expect it's going to be extended again. At least that's what I think the Democrats are going to do. They like doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Let's go to Bill in Bremerton. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yes, Lars, I just read an article that part of the Biden tax plan, they're going to tax Roth IRA distributions, which would be double taxation.
I don't know that well about the distribution. Well, if you've got a Roth, let me remember, IRAs are not taxed as they go in, they're taxed as they come out. Roths, I think, aren't they the same? You put money in that you've already been taxed on, and then at some point in your life, you take it back out. It's going to be subject to whatever are the tax laws in place at the time you take it out. If you're taking it out 2 decades from now, you really don't know what the tax laws are going to be, because that's dependent on a Congress that's probably going to be populated by people who are still in high school or college right now, because they'll be the members of Congress 20 years or 30 years from now. So, but is Joe Biden going to raise the tax rates? That's his plan. He plans to raise taxes in America by trillions of dollars. And if you bought into that nonsense that he tried to shovel out, that he was only going to raise taxes on people above $400,000, we already know that's a lie. The current bill before the Congress raises taxes on about 16% of Americans directly. And indirectly, Bill, we all pay them. Because if you raise corporate taxes, who do you think the corporations pay their taxes with? They pay it with the money they get from you and me. And all of us buy our food, our energy, our housing, our automobiles, our clothing, all our consumer goods are all bought from those corporations. And I don't care what Jen Psaki, Peppermint Patty says, those corporations will pass those taxes along. You've got the Lars Larson Show.